Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update, an original podcast from Charles Schwab, provides an information-packed daily market recap in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. I'm squeezing Stephen Stanley here with Amherst Pierpont as we wait for the President of the United States in Madrid. Steve Stanley just doing fabulous work on the makeup of the American economy with Amherst Pierpont. What's your biggest mystery into Q3, Steve Stanley, and the classic equation, consumption, investment, government, or trade dynamics? Which one is the great Stanley mystery?
Well, I think you got to watch the consumer and you got to watch housing, because the markets are starting to smell an economic slowdown, which I think is a little premature, but certainly that is the issue of the day. And if we're going to get a slowdown, that's where you're going to see it. So we've been focused very keenly, I think, over the last couple of months on housing, and it does seem to be cooling off, but it's cooling from a very hot temperature. And these numbers today on the consumer are a little disappointing. So I do think that the consumer is going to have a big summer, people getting out and doing all the things they haven't been able to do for the last couple of years. But the data this morning are not all that encouraging.
And Stephen, that's exactly where I wanted to go, especially because real spending declined for the first time going back to December, and more than people had previously expected. This is inflation-adjusted actual spending. How quickly is the consumer, based on this data and other incremental points that we're looking at, how quickly is the consumer rolling over in terms of their ability to really accept some of the price increases?
So there's ability and willingness, right? And I think the ability is unusually strong because consumers are sitting on a huge pile of cash that accumulated during the pandemic, all the fiscal largesse in particular. So consumers have the wherewithal, at least in the aggregate, to spend. I mean, obviously, inflation is going to create stress for certain households, but there is a question about willingness. And I think given the consumer confidence data, you have to wonder a little bit about how eager consumers are going to be to continue to spend. My sense is that they're still very enthusiastic. Certainly any field trip to the airport would suggest that that people are still looking to, to get out.
Lisa, you're going to have a field trip to the airport tomorrow.
And it's going to be a nightmare. I'm already prepared for this. Flights are getting canceled. How much, though, is this part of the story, that it is a blip, it is revenge travel, it is people who are reprising the past that they were not able to live during the pandemic, that ends? It ends with the miserable experiences that people have in the airport. It ends with the fact that people have gone out, they've traveled, they're now exhausted and are ready to start whatever it is that is the post-pandemic reality. How much is this the last hurrah when it comes to travel and some of these inputs that leads to the next phase that begins at Labor Day?
Right. Well, there's definitely, it seems like there's going to be some catch up. So that's the short run burst, if you will, in the economy. And I think that does certainly protect any threat of a downturn in the near term. But as you say, I mean, once you get past that, then it becomes, it gets back to the usual fundamentals. I mean, certainly one thing that is on the positive side is the labor market and, you know, the unemployment rate around 3.5%. So people have jobs and incomes are not necessarily keeping up with inflation the way we might like, but income growth has been pretty strong and I think sufficient to support ongoing growth in consumption. So I take your point, but I think that the underlying fundamentals are still pretty good. I think what we really have to see is how sensitive is the economy to higher interest rates. We haven't had higher interest rates for a very long time, certainly going back before the financial crisis. And it remains to be seen how sensitive the economy is as interest rates rise. And I think housing is going to be the test case there. So that, again, is why I'm keeping a close
eye on that sector. Stephen, when this conversation often comes up, I often hear economists describe the aggregate story, the headline stuff. Can you break it down a little bit more for us? What the low-income groups, middle-income groups, high-income groups, what you expect from them this year? Because from an equity market perspective, that's going to have different consequences, different outcomes, ramifications for different companies.
Sure. Yeah. Well, if you go through the pandemic period and think about that accumulation in household balance sheets, there were really two stories. For the wealthier households, they weren't getting a lot of the fiscal largesse, but they were benefiting from the markets, in particular the equity market, but also housing. And then the people with more modest incomes were the ones that, for the most part, who were receiving the rebate checks and the unemployment supplemental unemployment benefits and things like that. So even the folks at the lower end of the spectrum came out of the pandemic, perhaps a lot of them at least, in better shape than they might have been otherwise. Of course, you know, over time that cushion will get spent. And in particular in this environment, inflation will erode the purchasing power to a degree. So it's going to be important for the labor market to stay strong. Those folks at the lower end of the wage spectrum have been doing particularly well in terms of wage gains, and you know, you'd like to see that continue.
You would. Stephen, thank you. Stephen Stanley there of Amherst Pierpont of the Challenge to the Consumer, issues we've all got to think about when it comes to markets and this economy. Closing out June and looking ahead to July. July 13th, CPI in America. July 14th, JP Morgan kicking off things for the banks in corporate America. Looking ahead to earnings. Looking ahead to what this bond market is going to provide for this Federal Reserve and its next meeting. Mike Schumacher joins us now, Global Head of Macro Strategy at Wells Fargo. And Mike, Lisa, Tom and I are trying to work out where the bite point is in this credit market for this Fed to have a rethink. If it's not where we are now, where is it, Mike?
Yeah, it's interesting, John. If you look at high yield, typically it peaks at about 10% in the cycle. Right now it's high eights. So I would say that's 10-ish, maybe somewhere around there, but nowhere near current levels. The Fed's looking right now at the tightening conditions and saying, yeah, it hurts. Yeah, it's painful, but this is a feature. It's not a bug. We're going to see more of it.
Michael, the clear theme here, and particularly off the important panel yesterday, is the Fed and other central banks are resolute. My reading of Meltzer, Anna Schwartz, Friedman, Richard Timberlake of the Georgia School is simple. That's baloney. They always succumb to the political zeitgeist, the political pressure. Is it going to be the same way this time?
I suspect the Fed and the other central banks will feel a ton of pressure from the politicians, Tom. Yep. It's almost inevitable. But the question is how quickly they, I wouldn't say cave, but have that impact their decision making. And for Chairman Powell in particular, it's really a challenge because he's got to look at that wall down at the Fed and say, you know what, Arthur Burns, worst chairman ever. William Miller, probably a close number two. I don't want to be number three. Jeez. I've got to fight inflation. And I think that personal legacy is going to outweigh the politics for him for quite some time.
Michael Schumacher, harsh today.
Well, Mike, given that harsh view and given some of the bearishness that you have currently looking at this market, how do we get to 4% on a 10-year treasury yield, given that we are looking at such a pessimistic scenario that usually sends people back into bonds?
Yeah, Lisa, it's really interesting. I think you've got to break it down into where does inflation end the cycle and what sort of real rate is going to be implied or expected at that point in time. So we think core inflation, that is, ends the cycle maybe 250, perhaps a bit higher. And real yields, at least in our view, Wells Fargo, have to be 150 plus. So that gets you to 4%. You might say, well, wow, 150 with a recession, how can that happen? Think about the last cycle. Granted, fairly mild, but still, at the end of that cycle, you had the real 10-year rate about 115. So 150 with incredible inflation, and really the Fed wanted to take out insurance against that inflation genie coming back out of the bottle. That seems pretty reasonable to us. That's how we get to 4.
What does 4% on a treasury yield for a 10-year treasury yield do to U.S. equities?
That's a really rough ride. So I think if you do get 4% on 10s, certainly speed matters. But let's say it happens sometime around the end of this year. It takes stocks down quite a bit. I'm not sure if they get down toward 3,000. I'll leave that to Chris Harvey, but it's going to be a pretty painful journey.
We'll catch up with Chris later and ask him that. Mike, I just want to finish up with your reflections on yesterday. What was the big standout thing for you, listening to President Lagarde, listening to Chairman Powell, listening to Governor Bailey too?
When I listen to those three central bankers, John, it strikes me the ECB's got the toughest job. Certainly, it's most closely impacted by the situation in Russia and Ukraine. And I listened to Christine Lagarde and say, well, okay, so the ECB's history of rate hikes is not particularly great. And on top of that, you've got the question of gas flows. I would circle in bold red, July 21st on the calendar. It's the ECB meeting. And also, perhaps more importantly, that's the day the Nord Stream pipeline comes off maintenance. Will the gas go back on? How much? That's going to drive policy for the ECB. So they're all uncomfortable, but I think that's the central bank that's got the biggest challenge ahead.
Fascinating stuff, Mike. Mike Shoemaker there of Wells Fargo.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcasts. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
For Global Wall Street, get out the pad of paper and take notes. Jane Foley is a student of foreign exchange, yes, dollar-centric, but with Rabobank, far more looking at the linkages between foreign exchange. What I notice irrefutable, and I know that President Trump was way out front on this, Jane, is strong, strong dollar. Trade weighted dollar by any indices is back to 2003, even back to 2002. What is the significance of a strong dollar back 20 years?
Oh, well, this is, as you say, a pretty strong dollar, but I think what it's reflecting is the riskiness of other assets. I mean, there is a pretty strong correlation or inverted correlation between the dollar on one hand and risky assets. When risky assets are not performing well, the dollar goes up and vice versa. And I think if we look at the tone in markets right now, people talking about right. recession, the US recession potentially over the winter in Europe because of gas prices, you know, slower growth worldwide, then that's an environment which the dollar performs well and risky assets do not. And I think that's, you know, very much a story that we're looking at right now.
I don't go short term with too much respect for your work, Jane, but I am going to do it here on June 30. Where does euro and yen set up against dollar September 30?
Well, you know, our forecast for euro dollar for a while has been, you know, 103-ish. And the reason for that is that, you know, we have this massive big support level in 103.5. And you know, we're staring really closely at that today. If we go below that, you know, we could see parity. And I think for a while, right, we've been able to outline the risk of parity, and this is to do with Europe. This is to do with gas prices high over the winter. This is to do with that creating these recessionary conditions, stagflation, and that of course putting a lot of focus on fragmentation in the eurozone, which is a bad story for the euro. So that is what we're looking at, I think, this week. But with respect to the yen, well, you know, that is a yield story. Now the dollar's gone up today more than the yen, and it's brought us up to above 136. But actually, if US yields do start to come down, then I think that gives the Bank of Japan a little bit of room to, you know, carry on doing their yield curve control until they want to stop it, which will be when wages begin to go up in Japan.
Jane, I want to stick on the euro for a minute. You're really saying it's quite bearish for the euro right now, which a lot of people see the same, especially given some of the gas constraints for Germany. So why haven't we seen more weakness already?
You know what? I think people are only just beginning to come around to the recessionary story for the eurozone. We've had that as a forecast for a while, and we've been an outlier. But I think more recently, you know, that has become, or that view that we could see recession over the winter months has become a little bit more commonplace in the market. Now, we've got Lagarde still defending the view that she still thinks the ECB, we would still carry on seeing growth in the eurozone. But the fact that she's defending it again this week, the fact that she's reiterating it, almost sounds like a pushback against the fact that she's aware of these weighted views coming through from the market about eurozone growth. Now, if you look back to last week, we had the German finance or economy minister talking about the possibility, you know, that we could have maybe supply cut off to some industries in Germany. That would relate to Italy too. Very difficult not to see recession if that happens.
Jane, the spiraling effect of a weakening currency in an inflationary environment is something that is also a bear case because it will only exacerbate inflationary pressures in the euro region, prompting the ECB potentially to act more aggressively, only furthering the downturn. How much are you looking at the incremental weakening in the currency as a bear case for the economic trajectory?
You know, this is really quite interesting, and I think we've seen this quite a lot in the last few weeks, certainly this month, amongst central banks. If you look, for instance, at a speech by Catherine Mann from the Bank of England last week, she was talking about the spillover effects of the Fed hiking by large amounts and that coming through into the UK and perhaps setting the scene for a more aggressive pace of interest rate hikes in the UK just to defend the currency. Now, you can see that already in Norway. Norway hiked interest rates recently by 50 basis points, bigger than expected. It only served to stop the currency going down. It didn't push the currency higher. The Riksbank today, 50 basis points, not an awful a lot of gain for the currency, etc. So we're seeing this momentum where central banks have to go big, because all of the big ones are going big. And as you say, that can just accentuate the downside risks in terms of demand. And whilst that might fit well, perhaps for the US, maybe for Europe and certainly not for the UK, will that be necessarily suitable when you have less wage inflation and perhaps more vulnerable demand there?
What a great point. Jane Foley there of Rabobank, the head of FX strategy.
Chief Global Strategist at Principal Global Investor Seema Shah joins us right now. Seema, you wrote a mid-year report 5 days ago. What's changed in the last 5 days? What is the new staggering into Q3?
Hi, John. Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. Look, I don't know what's necessarily changed. I think all that we've seen is that central bankers are finally being a little bit upfront about what they're actually having to deal with. And they've finally emphasized, and especially for the Fed, they finally emphasize that price stability has to be their number one priority. And I think for markets, that's given a bit of a wake-up call. This is not going to be an easy ride. If anyone thinks that equities can rally to the back of the year, they're making the assumption that the Fed is going to let go of its entire focus on price stability and step back from that. And we have a very different view. We think things are going to get pretty tough.
Seema, that's another way of saying they are not going to tolerate an easing of financial conditions. They're not going to tolerate a rallying equity market. They're not going to tolerate tightening credit spread. So I want to understand from you just how much downside you think there is. Do you think of this as a moment where markets can't rally, or do you think of this as a moment where markets have to sell off more?
So it's interesting because when we look at technicals, if you look at just investor sentiment, it is getting extremely negative. You know, there's been a fair amount of flows into cash as well, which means that I think we could see a bit of a technical rally over the next couple of months, assuming that there are no negative, or I should say positive upside prints on the inflation side. But that doesn't mean that that is a sustained rally, which is going to continue into 2023 by any means. We think that as soon as you start to see your second leg of the downturn, which is essentially when earnings growth starts to come down, that is when you get your a further drop in equity market declines. How far we go from here is a difficult one to call. I think you could get another 10 to 15% drop from this point, but between now and then, you could get a bit of a rally.
If we were doing a full-on jargon hour, we would be talking about a soft recession, which possibly is the biggest cliche of the moment, as we talk about how much this contour of the contours of this particular recession will be different than those of 2008 or 2009. Do you agree with this assessment that it's going to be shallow, that it's not going to be as painful as previous downturns?
I do. And I think the reason is that when you think about the GFC, that was so much imbalance that had to be worked through the economy, and that dragged it out for quite a long time and also made it pretty deep. I think from our perspective, we can see that this is going to be a shallow recession. But almost the more difficult part is that once we start to see the Fed cut rates in response to recession and inflation fears coming down, how far do they really go? Do they go back to the 0% level that we've become so accustomed to? Or do they start to settle it just below the neutral rate, which is around 2%? So I agree that this is a more inflationary period going forward for the next 10, 20 years. And monetary policy is going to have to follow with that.
So Seema, how does that reshape your thesis in terms of how to arrange some of your assets? I'm thinking particularly of 60-40 that just had its worst quarter ever.
Yeah, well, I think this really plays into the idea that it's real assets, right? We're looking at not just a medium or a short-term inflationary period. This is a medium-term inflation outlook where commodities infrastructure can really continue to outperform. From a bond side, well, look, I think we can still be thinking about higher quality and moving into slightly longer duration. But unfortunately, the longer duration doesn't work for too long because we just don't see US Treasury yields falling too far if you start to think that even in a recession, the Fed isn't going to cut all the way to zero.
Had a couple of messages this morning from a terminal subscriber, and he talked about the consensus that we've gone over a million times and how quickly that consensus has changed. This is what he said. I think the market call was this. The Fed won't hike much in 23. The Fed won't hike 50. The Fed won't hike 75. Inflation peaked in March. Fed will pause in September. Inflation will come down in the fall. The Fed will pause in early 23. No recession, no recession. 25% recession risk, 50% recession risk. And now seemingly, Tom, the new one, and this is not me throwing shade at Seema, because Seema, I'll give you the chance to respond to this, but the new consensus view is recession but a shallow one. And we've heard that several times this morning. In fact, we've heard it a lot of times this week.
John, you're killing me.
Well, give me something, Tom.
Magnitude. I would look within all the discussion here of Y equals C plus I plus G plus NX, the international component, the trade component. It's about gaming the magnitude of a slowdown. John Williams, New York Fed, says there's not going to be a recession. We're going to get that growthy agony of a more subdued positive statistic.
1 to 1.5 is what I think he said. Seema, I wanted to give you the chance to respond to that because it started to become this consensus view. Recession maybe, but a shallow one. You comfortable with that, that a lot of other people just see it the same way, but we've had that story a few times this year and it's changed pretty quickly?
I think that investors, just the central banks, have been caught out many times in terms of the inflation view. And, you know, through all of it, like energy and food inflation are going to be the wild cards. That is going to be difficult to predict. I think from the recession perspective, because we just fundamentally don't have major imbalances in the system, it's difficult to see it getting to the GFC perspective, unless, this is a caveat, which is where you get commodities continuing to rise, hitting that $150 a barrel. And then you're looking at stagflationary shock, which in that case, that's a deeper recession and it's a longer recession. But that's the wild card.
Seema, thank you for that explanation at the end there too. Thank you very much. Seema Shah of Principal Global Investors.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.